Welcome to Eye Conversations. I'm Petra Stoffberg, co-founder of Wardrobe Icons, and today I'm joined by our features editor, Brooke Lepore-Trench, to talk to one of my favourite people, Catherine Omerand. The topic is honesty, and there's no one better suited. She's a respected journalist and author of best-selling book, Why Social Media is Ruining Your Life. And I hope you find her as inspiring as we do. Catherine, thank you so much for coming into Wardrobe Icons HQ to talk to us.
Thank you for having me.
So we thought that your theme should be honesty, because we felt that through your book and your career, you've really inspired honesty through social media. So I want to start kick off by asking you, obviously people might know you from your book, which is called Why Social Media is Ruining Your Life. But what people might not know is your earlier career. So do you want to talk us a bit about what you did before?
Yeah, of course. So I had a proper traditional magazine publishing route in, really. I did a master's degree in fashion history at London College of Fashion, and then interned for free for 2 years, which, you know, is quite sensational, being paid $3,000 for a year's worth of work. But there we go, you take it. Yeah, exactly. And I was the first online writer for Matches, back in the day when they launched the website. So I did all the copywriting, descriptions of every single product, and all of the marketing copy online. So there's always been a digital element to my career, really, and that stayed with me all the way through. And I feel like it was really fortunate to have that opportunity. And I mean, when I say a digital element, all I knew how to do was fill in a CMS. But the bosses at magazines literally thought I was a tech wunderkind because no one knew anything.
Well, I know. I remember when I was at Look and we started having an online presence, and then everyone had to do some online articles, and it was all roll of the eye, oh, it's my turn to have to do an article, and then we always have to argue about who had done it last, and it was just such a chore, and it was just never felt like that wasn't what we really wanted to do. We wanted to do the beautiful shoots and the beautiful layouts, and not just, you know, the sort of celebrity galleries.
Definitely, yeah. And I mean the great thing about it is it offered this new way in for young people around about when I started in the fashion industry, because people that worked on magazines didn't want to do it. My first proper job was as a stylist assistant at Sunday Times Style. I assisted Sara Hassan and Natalie Hartley for 18 months, then segued onto the features team, then actually left and moved to Cape Town with my ex-husband.
You lived in Cape Town?
Yeah.
Well, you know, because you know I was South African.
Yeah, well, exactly. I do. Yeah, a fun kind of stint. And I did bits and bobs of work for the Financial Times out there and Glamour and this, that and the other. So it was a really cool moment. But very quickly, I realised that I wanted to be in the fashion industry in the UK. And it was an amazing realization, I think, because I'd become so disenchanted with all elements of my life in London, and I was like, it must be better somewhere else, etc., etc. And then it was kind of careful what you wish for. Gosh, that's all I want. I wanted to be back in London. I wanted to be back in the thick of things. And it really has, that's kind of steadied me all the way through the rest of my career now. After that trip, there was an opportunity came up at Grazia, and Paula asked me to come in and interview for it. And I got it, and I was senior fashion news and features editor at Grazia for 3 years. And it was really doing everything that I dreamed of. It was the proper time to shine moment in my career, and all of those years of grafting kind of led to that, and it changed the game for me. And one of those things I always say to people with their career, if you hang on long enough, tenacity, in my opinion, quite often beats out talent, and that's really depressing sometimes, but it at least has to be 50-50, if not 60-40, sadly.
And my husband always says 90% of a job is just showing up.
It is, and showing up and having your face there and hanging on. And it was a really, really great ride and amazing experience, and I, you know, wouldn't regret a second of it. But anyway, regardless, I set up, went back to my consultancy, but also in the interim, I'd been building a kind of fashion influencer profile ever since I was probably my first year at Grazia, very slowly building it up. In that kind of moment of, you know, when I was at List, I'd started to make some money from it. it was a really funny time that I was posting all of these great pictures, etc. Everything in my life looked amazing, but actually a lot of things were not going particularly well behind the scenes.
Is that when you started to feel the disconnect, do you think, between your more curated online life compared to the one that you were actually living?
Yeah, definitely. I think I'd always felt a bit awkward about it, just because, you know, I'm quite a real person. And the thing that I always loved about fashion magazines is, yes, you had the fantasy of the beautiful spreads, but there was also like a real life story in there that you could connect with someone on an emotional level. And the problem with social media is that emotion, at least at the beginning, had been completely eradicated. It was such a you know, I guess, space for fantasy exclusively. I remember that year I'd gone on a trip to Mexico and I was with a bunch of five other women and we were all really hardworking, self-made, running our own businesses, and everyone was going through some kind of strife. One of them was having issues with their family, another one was having issues at work, I'd been having some issues in a relationship, someone else had had like a really, really bad breakup, like one of those ones that people write about. You know, that's all we were talking about on the holiday, because that's all you do talk about with your girlfriends. You talk about the real stuff.
So I'm not someone who, for example, likes to moan or necessarily be too real on Instagram, just because I find it more of an inspirational space.
Yeah, and there's obviously that argument for it, for sure. Everyone's different and the way they approach it is different. My big feeling was that we're on this trip, all going through these difficult things, and then you look at the pictures and it just looks like no one ever had to work a day in their life. Everything is ideal. And it just made me think, if I was a 19, 20-year-old girl trying to get into fashion and careers like this, and I saw these pictures, I mean, it was bad enough when I was starting out and you'd come into the office and I'd be wearing a Primark dress and girls would be coming in with, you know, two Chanel handbags a week. But at least you recognize them, you know? Like, yeah. These days in social media, you don't recognize anyone's clothes because they wear something new every day. And it was just this kind of feeling that it had got so far away from something that someone, I guess, like me as a 18-year-old could have realistically aspired to.
And then also, it sounds like you had a feeling of or a sense of responsibility as being someone who was influential. Did you feel that weight?
I definitely feel really like hyper-conscious of other people's feelings. It's a really tricky scenario to be in, to be honest, because you're never going to please everyone, obviously, and just by being you, you're going to ruffle some people's feathers, you know, and I'm well aware that, you know, you can't make everyone like you all the time, and some things you might do might inadvertently hurt someone else. Whatever happened, basically, I knew I wanted to set up a website. And I was like, if I'm going to do it, it has to be something where I feel like I'm presenting a wholly more rounded version of who I am. Yes, the lovely pictures, but also some stories behind it too.
Is that also why you've got two separate accounts? Because I kind of feel with your the one that's just your name, Catherine Omeron, it's more curated and it's maybe slightly less real. I'm doing quotation marks. And then your Mama Loves Grey, I feel like is a very accurate depiction, or at least how I found motherhood.
That was a definite decision when I had my baby, because I knew I wanted to talk about motherhood in a way that wasn't sugar-coated. I don't know, I just had a feeling it was going to be hard, and it was. I just felt like there wasn't really any place for it. Equally, I'm going to be really honest, I wasn't interested in kids until I got pregnant. So it's like, why would I suddenly voice all of this information on people that are following me for shoes and bags, and maybe they're like 26, you know? Do they really want to hear about like nipple chafe and sleeping rotations and stuff? Like, I'm not being funny. I would have just been like immediately delete. So it was definitely a business consideration as well. And it was nice to keep a place that was just for me, for the dreams and the shoes. And don't get me wrong, there is nothing wrong with creating these worlds and fantasies, because if I hadn't had fashion magazines, I'd probably still be living a very similar life to a lot of my peers at school. I would have dreamt and, you know, had a completely different way of living and travelled the world and worked with all these glamorous, amazing people. Like, it's still an incredible portal to allow people to dream and aspire to do something else. But just for me personally, I got to the point where I started to feel just uncomfortable with the way I was presenting myself as just one, like, side of, or facet, I guess, of my personality, and something just snapped. So I decided that this website that I was going to set up was going to cover stories of glamorous women who worked in, you know, I guess, traditional fashion publishing as well as social media. But I was going to start to talk to them about the other sides of their lives. It was unbelievable, the reaction to it. It was 2016. I don't really think we were talking about authenticity at all. It definitely wasn't a hashtag yet.
You have been able to be very honest about your life and your divorce and the reality about motherhood and work and the balance between everything. Do you find that's been very cathartic? Do you find, like, more at peace with yourself than maybe you were 5 years ago?
Oh my God, like, I didn't know who I was in my 20s. I was just trying to be whatever version the person in the room wanted me to be. And then everything went to crap. And I came out the other side and I was like, well, I'm still here. People are going to have to take me as I am. And, you know, not everyone likes it, obviously. You know, if you sit down next to someone who has, like, literally no small talk at dinner, like, straight in, so what's the hardest thing you've ever gone through in your life? You know, it's not everyone's cup of tea. But, you know, equally, I think you definitely, by being honest, and there's one side of things that I always said that I would only ever write about things that I'd personally come to terms with. Sometimes when I'm going through things or really, like, struggling with finding an answer for something, there is a feeling that maybe I should, you know, write about it. But I always think it's a good idea to get to a point of at least some level of balance and release, the catharsis almost, before I talk about it.
Is it a bit like when you send a text drunk? It's better to wait,
yes,
until you're
literally
sobered up.
Exactly.
And then decide if you still, or angry for that
exactly
matter. Like, I always, I type loads of texts, usually to Lara, really angry. But then I just think, is that going to be useful in the morning? Probably not.
Yeah,
I'm not really. I'm not really angry with her, but I'm just joking. But you know what I mean? Like, I feel like the kind of honesty that you're talking about, that it is cathartic and it is great, but it also, you need to sort of pick your moments and make
you
sure
do
that you're releasing what you really want to.
Exactly, and there has to be a reason that you're doing it. Like, the reason that I had there are lots of things that I could share about my life that would just be, like, pretty indulgent, but, like, the reason that I shared those things is because I truly believed that they were going to resonate with other women and be a support for them. I do think honesty is a dish best served cold. You really need to be sure that you're comfortable with putting information like that out there about yourself, because you have no ability to predict the feedback you're going to get.
People often use honesty as a kind of veil to be mean or overly critical. Have you found that since you've sort of opened Pandora's box and said, you know, this is me, this is, you know, I'm trying to be honest, I'm trying to be truthful. Have you found that generally it's been very positive, or do you get a bit of both?
Generally, it's been very positive, but at the end of the day, some people are going to confuse vulnerability for weakness, and that really sometimes has annoyed me. If you show your vulnerability, it's generally something that you do from strength, because it's something that you're sharing to either help others or change the conversation. But I think especially with the motherhood thing, I got a lot of messages from people that I knew in real life saying, oh, it's so terrible to see you struggling, or I don't know why you talk about this online, you should just text me, type thing. And I'm like, don't get me wrong here, like, this is really hard, and I'm definitely definitely, you know, yeah.
Point of view sharing is so that hopefully you'll help other people.
Exactly, and build a community around it and change the conversation and make people feel like there aren't taboos and we don't have to keep up a facade of, yes, it's all great, or aren't we, you know, every day is the most lucky, fantastic day in the world, because that's not the reality of having children or living life full stop, you know.
I know, but I always have to stop myself when I meet women that are about to become mothers for the first time, because I just kind of want to go to them, it's so hard work, it's so life changing, like you just can't prepare yourself, yeah. Like don't even try, in a way, like just go for it, you'll be fine, call me when you need me, yeah. But I have to stop myself, because I just, also everyone experienced motherhood in different ways, exactly. Everyone's baby's different, exactly. Everyone has different financial means, can afford, yeah, different kinds of help, have family near them, don't have family, yeah, near, you know, all those things has an impact on how you find it.
Of course, so it does. And obviously your temperament, you know, it's the chemistry between you and your child as well. It's two different people, and I think people forget about that. They're like, you know, oh, if you were calmer, maybe it would be easier or less anxious, blah blah blah, and you're like, well, if I didn't have a child that screamed 19 hours a day, maybe I'd be calm.
I remember that's one of the things that Lara and I feel like really cemented our friendship, is when we were really honest with each other about how we felt about being mothers for the first time, and I think it helped also that we were both having the same kind of experience, which was finding it really, really tough and really feeling like out of our depth, and not, and normally being quite confident women who always felt that we knew what we were doing, suddenly we were in a situation where we're like, this is just clueless, and just finding, like, just going through the day was really hard work, and we weren't normally those kind of people. And I think so that sort of, like you said, having a community, and she was my community, because I could just talk to her and go, oh my god, today was just the worst, and and then she would call me and do the same thing, and that was a cathartic experience.
And there's camaraderie in it, isn't there? Yeah. You know, one of the things that I've always said is, like, even in my 20s, I can remember you'd see your friends from university and everyone would sit down and it would all start top line. How's it going? Oh, I've got a promotion. Oh, I've met this guy. Oh, I'm moving to this new flat. And then, like, three wines in, it'd be like, actually, he's not being very nice to me, and my new job is terrible, and there are terrible neighbours that live upstairs. And, like, you've come in with this, like, bravado and feeling like you had to pretend to the world, and then you've remembered that you have friends that are there for you no matter what, and you leave feeling like, okay, everyone at this table isn't doing amazingly well, we're all in it together and we'll get there. And I do think that that is one of the most amazing thing about female friendships full stop, that they're there for the good and the bad. And I think being honest amongst your girlfriends is, like, it, you know, it's such a gift, it really is. And I think actually it's probably what men potentially lack in their friendships, especially on an emotional level, talking with such honesty. I think it is something that we're really, really lucky to have.
So In terms of, like, obviously dealing with criticism, or people who aren't as positive about you being honest and vulnerable online, what's your advice for dealing with that?
I mean, it's always hard. Criticism full stop. Who likes it? No one. I mean, even when it's constructive.
Oh, that's my word. No criticism is constructive.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm just right. No. I mean, look, it's, you know, it's really definitely a difficult thing. I think my big thing is, if any criticism comes to me that is unreasonable, or, you know, there's a level of rudeness or, you know, swear words or whatever. And, like, fairly recently I posted something about abortion and I got some quite extraordinary messages, and those are the ones that I wouldn't respond to. But if it's something to do with, you know, if someone's actually got a question, quite often you'll answer it and they'll go, oh my word, I'm so sorry, that was so rude. Who even am I to ask you that? You're so kind to respond in such a, you know, polite way. And you're like, yeah, it was rude, but, you know, we've now ended up in a really positive situation, and hopefully you'll continue following the journey. And
I mean, obviously you've talked about, you went on this trip, you were the girlfriends, and you noticed that you all had were sort of posting these sort of idealized pictures of your experience, but it wasn't actually what you were going through. What you obviously, that was, must have been some kind of turning point and planted the seed for the book. But at what point were you like, right, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to write a book about how social media is ruining your life.
So the truth is, I got approached by an amazing literary editor, and I definitely would never have thought I had it in me yet to write a book. Always in the back of my mind, I'd think, you know, maybe when I've got something to say, or like I'm more experienced or a better writer. And I'd say throughout my career, I've always lowballed myself. And it's just, it's mad looking back on it. Even like for my master's degree, I really wanted to do fashion journalism, but I felt like I wouldn't be good enough to do it, so I did a fashion history master's degree. I didn't even apply for the journalism one because I'm like, oh, I won't be good enough to get on the course. I mean, I had a first-class degree from Edinburgh, you know, like, I don't know where it came from, but I always say to younger people, like, don't think that you're suddenly going to wake up one day and be this confident woman who believes in themselves and is going to go out there and get X, Y, and Z. Like, sometimes it's other people that come into your life to persuade you that you're capable of doing things that you would never have believed of. And in this case, that's what happened to me. And Abby came and said, I've read your website and I think there's some mileage in it. Why don't you go away and think of a book that might be relevant? And initially, I thought that it would be a book of other people's stories, and I started writing it that way. And then Abby made the point that actually the pieces on my website that got the highest reads and engagement were actually the pieces that I'd written. And I talked about money, and I talked about fertility struggles, and I talked about divorce. Yes. So she said that I needed to reconsider how the narrative would run, and I guess I made it then part memoir, part summary of where we're at in the world of social media, bringing in a lot of other women's voices as well. I think there are between 35 and 40 other influencers quoted in the book, and they were kind enough to share their stories with me. But that's kind of how it came about, and it was really piecemeal at the beginning because I fell pregnant and I was absolutely a waste of space. I feel like I didn't do any work for a solid 5 months. Like, I got up, potter around the kitchen for a minute, and then go for a little lie down, and suddenly it'd be 5:30. That was like, then I'd be sick 40 times in between. But you know, like, it was really, really, really incredibly difficult to keep a freelance career going through at least half my pregnancy. But then it kind of kicked into gear, and I started writing like a mad, crazed woman. And I think in 3 months I wrote nearly 80,000 words.
Wow, that's a lot.
It is, considering it isn't fiction. Obviously, everything had to have a citation and had, you know, been written in a pretty strong journalistic way. It wasn't like I could just bash X amount of words out. So yeah, it was really full on. But I didn't finish it before I gave birth.
I remember you telling me that I saw you after you had Grey, and then you said, so yeah, I've just got to finish a book, and I've just got a couple of other jobs to do, and then I'm going away to France to see my mum. And I just remember thinking, good God, this woman has got enormous amounts of energy with a newborn.
Yeah, it was a horrible pressure. I wouldn't recommend it to anyone. But, you know, you don't know before you know, do you? That's all I can say. And plus, women are strong. We can get through anything. So looking back on it, though, I do think it nearly sent me to an early grave. But I've finished that final 15,000 words, did all of the edits, and then it was done. And actually, I think the harder side of it, in retrospect, was probably having to do the promotion, like feeling very out of sorts. You know, the baby was about 5 or 6 months. I didn't fit into any of my clothes still. I didn't feel great about myself. I didn't know really what my position was going to be in the new world or what my job was or any of that. And then I had to go out and let people read my book, and a lot of very, very revealing pieces of information about me. And it was really raw.
And did you find that the reaction was generally positive, or was there, you know, any feedback that you were like,
oh,
not?
Well, obviously I like scoured the Goodreads website to read the things that weren't particularly nice as well. Although I'm pretty good at that. Like, you know, I did it once and then I was like, okay, some people think that, I'm not going to indulge it.
It's good that you don't like hold on to that, because I find like often people, you could have like 50 reviews that's amazing, and then you have one person going, oh, I thought it was a load of rubbish, and then that's all you can fixate on. on? Is that one thing?
Of course, of course. As I said, like, I'm pretty comfortable with who I am and what I'm doing now. So that means that some people aren't going to like it. You know, that's if you're going to be 100% you, you're never going to please everyone. So it's far better to be Marmite and be someone that's specific instead of lowest common denominator trying to please every person in the world. And it's really hard to think like that, because obviously I now build an element of my career and pay my mortgage through being likable, and that's a really difficult scenario sometimes to square when you're someone that has worked so flipping hard not to be a people pleaser and base your esteem on other people's validation. But it's, you know, obviously something I still struggle with, but I do push really hard against it.
Now that you're in this world of, like, being honest and open and stuff, do you now really consider what you put down more than you did before? Do you worry more about that you have to be really honest in every single post and really real? And whereas before, maybe you were like, oh, I could just put like a silly, like, little caption, it doesn't matter.
Golden hour. Short hair, don't care. You know, yeah, it's really, really difficult, because do you know what? You can't be like having a honesty provoking moment every single day of your life, because that would end up being very dishonest, I think. You'd have to manufacture something on a daily basis to talk about at great depth. And at the end of the day, most of the people that follow me really came along for the ride because of shoes and bags and lovely clothes, and they obviously like my attitude to things, but it has to be the balance, and sometimes that balance goes one way and sometimes it swings the other way. But I guess that's the nature of my personal platform at the moment. I do think that whenever I get an opportunity to be honest or more real about it, I always take it. Sometimes there are moments where I feel like nervous about saying certain things. I think we all feel that in the social media context.
It's definitely, I think in the last year it's really changed.
Yeah.
For example, I put up a comment. It was just a stupid flippant thing. Like, there was a picture of Nicole Kidman, and she had like a particularly crinkly neck in this picture on the carpet, but a perfectly porcelain face. And I just made a joke like, oh, me and Nicole Kidman seem to be aging the same way, where we have like a crinkly neck and, you know, like not really aging our face. And I got so many comments from people saying, I thought you were a supportive woman. How can you be so negative about another human being, like another family woman? It's not really, you're not sort of, I didn't think this is what you were about. I thought you were about championing women. I was like, of course I am. And like you're like showing up at age. And I was like, yeah, but it's just like saying that I've got the same size bum as Kim Kardashian. Like, I just don't really see it.
Yeah, it's
like,
hard, isn't it? Especially when Nora Ephron existed and, you know, it all became about wearing a roll neck. Like, we need to talk about my neck is a whole freaking conversation, isn't it? I mean, it's really difficult. And obviously you want to be supportive and send really positive messages out there and all of that, but no one's a paragon of virtue. And the thing is, even as you try to strike the right balance, there'll be someone that isn't, you know, the thing is, you can't represent everyone because you're not representative of everyone. Mm-hmm. And it would be really incredibly crass for me to say that I could represent women with entirely different life experience to me. You know, I am a woman of a certain class, background, you know, heritage, all of those things, intelligence, whatever you want to call it. How the hell am I meant to be everything to every woman? Obviously not. And I think it's a really difficult situation now when people look on social media, and if they don't see their reality reflected immediately, they feel like it's cause for criticism.
Your book's been something that sparked a conversation, which is amazing. And it's something that we've all talked about loads and read as well. What has been one of the more surprising or one of the takeaways from you from just this experience of being someone who's provoked all this thinking around social media?
The website was probably the moment that I realized that none of us are alone. Like, you know, so many of the things that I'd been feeling and struggling with were universal. And that is something that I feel it was probably really broadly reflective of a lot of people's lives. And if anything that, you know, I've done, I guess, was a broad representation of we are, you know, as the human race right now, I think that probably was it. From the book itself, you know, I get messages every day saying how helpful it had been for people. I also get a lot of messages from students saying thanks for doing all of the research for my dissertation, which, you know, I mean, I've written several dissertations, so I'm like, yeah, go for it, take it. But it was so researched, like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of papers were read for it. And yeah, it's great. It's a sweet thing to have people that aren't, I guess, in my generation talk to me about that and some of the issues raised. And while I was doing, you know, the book tour and all of the different festivals and events around it, I had so many amazing conversations with people. And really, when it comes down to it, it made me realize that all of the accolades that I'd hoped would make me feel successful from the book, you know, being on the BBC or on whatever, you know, on the radio or in magazines, all of that left me feeling quite flat. But actually the conversations, the one-on-one interactions with people and knowing something that you've put out there has made a difference to people's framework of how they view things, of the support that they might feel for a specific mental health struggle, that means something. Although often, especially at the moment, I feel like I'm not really the captain of my own ship anymore. I'm more like just letting the wind hit those sails. You know, it's a funny feeling for someone that's been really controlling to a certain extent of elements of their career to let go and just let the tides take you. But yeah, you know, I'll tell you what it's like on the other side of that.
Well, Catherine, thank you so much for coming in to talk to us. And everyone, remember about Catherine's book, Why Social Media is Ruining Your Life.
Thanks for listening to iConversations. Turns out talking never goes out of fashion. You can find more episodes of these insightful conversations with the women who inspire us on Apple Podcasts. Please rate, review, and subscribe. It really helps get the word out.